if you're not aware of it, it can really slip through your fingers. Like if you're advertising and you're not aware of diversity, you're going to have a bunch of white men in your ad and you're not even going to notice it. Whereas people of color notice it. You know, the people who are marginalized notice it every day. And so that's sort of what I'm trying to get us white people to notice it as well, because we have a lot to fix still. We have a lot to work on. It goes all the way to the government, society. I just want people who are not marginalized to realize the effect that their work and their emotional lives have on those people who are marginalized. Does that make sense?
Mm-hmm.
That's what I'm really hoping for with this series. I'm trying to be a responsible artist. I'm trying to change the things about myself that are less than perfect. But mostly I'm trying to educate myself about what people go through in this country that I have no idea about. Accessibility has become a huge issue for me, especially within the arts. You know, people with disabilities suffer in our culture just by not being able to get through doors and not being able to use facilities. And it's rampant, and it's alarming that even in 2021, we are still dealing with some of this stuff that we're dealing with. And I just want to do my part.
Mm-hmm.
And my work is my portraits, so it makes sense that I would use my portraits for representation.
That is painter Alice Blessing. Her works are far more than pretty faces on canvas. Her newest collection is called 13 Nonconformity. It's a series of children wearing large floral crowns, but below the surface of these playful, seemingly buoyant images are stories of personal power, the impact of representation, standing up for individuality, and embracing diversity.
The 13 is actually about an age. I wanted to study the developmental associations of the age that my child was when I started the series, which was 3 years ago. My child was a tween, and I remembered growing up, there was so much pressure as a girl going through puberty to become sexy, but not too sexy, and to be smart, but don't overshadow the boys. And the double standards that were placed on me at that age led to some really emotional problems. I developed eating disorders and I developed depression. And later on, I developed anxiety and ADHD. And so I was really worried about my kid at that age. I started thinking about the things that I had learned and about the double standards that women get put through when they kind of come of age at about 13. However, I ended up going down a totally different track because my child came out to me as non-binary. And so what I thought the project was sort of evolved into something totally different. It pertains more to my child and their reality and what is now my reality too, rather than what I grew up with. Something that was very pertinent to me has sort of been shown to me in a different light thanks to my child, which is interesting because I do tend to work around developmental stages, but this one really threw me for a loop.
How did they tell you?
They just kind of came out to me, and then it was just me for a while. So they came out to me about 2 years ago, but I was the only one who knew, and it was a struggle because I wanted to respect them and refer to them as them, but I couldn't do it in front of anybody else because they were still a she to everybody else. So there was a lot of growing pains for both of us through that process of coming out to everybody, including their grandparents, their father, and their extended family. They had to do that on their own. So I was trying to just be supportive. And I also had a lot of gender stuff to work through, which this series has actually helped me work through a lot of my antiquated gender beliefs. You know, I always thought I had a daughter, And I always wanted a daughter. Turns out I have a they. And I love them. Like, they're teaching me so much. But it was, as a mother, it was a struggle. And as a woman, it was a struggle for me to understand what they are going through. A huge struggle. And I thought I was so open-minded. And I am. But this was very personal. And it took me on my own journey through my antiquated beliefs.
First of all, I love that it was a secret between the two of you. It's yeah. kind of like incubating. But what kind of antiquated beliefs were you carrying through?
It's pretty interesting. I mean, when I grew up, I was born in 79. And so I, up until a couple years ago, was still working emotionally in a binary system. I saw it as men and women. I saw gender as men and women. And even though intellectually I knew that there was a spectrum of gender, emotionally I was still working in a binary system. And so when I started the series, I was really looking at how part of it was how I grew up as a female in a male-dominated society. And that was my struggle during puberty. But kids now, I think my child has had a totally different struggle. We're still figuring things out. One of the most important things is that I appreciate my kid for teaching me to get out of my own beliefs and learn something new. And I hope the world is changing, because I had a really difficult time growing up in the culture that I grew up in. It was awful for my brain, and I went through a lot. And so I'm relieved that they don't have the same issues that I had. But at the same time, I'm confused. I'm worried that I don't understand what's going on. I feel old. There's a lot of... It's been an emotional journey through this series. I included Native American girls. I included non-binary kids. You know, I wanted to include queer and genderqueer kids. But, you know, that age, you know, they might not all know everything about themselves yet at that age. So I really might find out more in 20 years about the sort of kids that I've included, which I think is beautiful. Like, you don't have to know everything about yourself at that age. You're still developing. You know, the culture, your parents, society has so much effect on you in ways that we don't even know, as I have found out. I included girls with disabilities, girls of color, girls from low socioeconomic backgrounds. It was hard for me to get a wide variety of kids, because if I wanted to keep it local, it came down to parents I know, what I know about the kids, which is, I wasn't trying to make them lay their whole personality on the line. At the same time, I wanted to make sure I represented a wide variety of kids. I didn't want to expose anybody or come out for them or any of that. So I struggled with representation versus telling a story that's not my own, because I don't want to do that. But I do want to do a wide representation of people. So at the same time I was creating, I've really been struggling with it as well, as a white woman.
Does everybody have the floral headpieces on?
Yes.
Could you talk about the significance of that?
Yeah, I'd love to. So essentially, I wanted to have a lot of color, because I have become obsessed with color. I've been studying color for quite a few years, and really bright colors make me feel joy. And I actually just saw this TED Talk, this woman was talking about the connection between joy and color. And it really struck a chord with me, because I feel that joy can be attained through bright colors. And guess what? This doctor agreed with me. So, but I wanted to include a lot of bright colors for the series. And so I decided to do flower crowns on everybody's head for the portraits. But I exaggerated them, so it's almost like the kids are popping out of like a burst of color, and everyone is a little different. And I studied color unification. I was starting from bright colors, but I also wanted to study to see which colors went well together, which colors had the essence of flowers. I love flowers. I just wanted to connect flowers and children. And I could connect it by saying that, you know, in a lot of cultures, there are ceremonies where girls coming of age wear flowers. But it's just, it's not true. The truth is that I love color and I wanted to include a lot of color. So I did.
You've been doing portraits for a long time.
Yeah, almost 20 years.
People's faces.
Yeah.
You really have the ability to capture people's essence. So it's astounding to me. It's so spot on.
Yeah, I've always been obsessed with getting people's features correctly so that in a small town like ours, if one citizen saw one of my portraits, I love it when they recognize who it is. They say, oh, I know Jan or whoever, and that looks just like her. Like, that's something about that really floats my boat. So I'm kind of obsessed with getting people's facial features exactly right, because with humans, every single part of the face has to be on track or it doesn't work, or, you know, that person isn't recognizable as themselves. With pets, it's so easy. You know, I paint a dog and 100 people might be like, oh, that looks like my dog. But with people, there's only one of them. And if I don't get it right, I know right away, and other people will know. And so there's sort of no hiding. Like, I want to get it right every time. Mm-hmm. So it's something inside me.
Mm.
Trying to kind of loose it up because I don't think portraits always have to be perfect. And I think mine have gotten too perfect. And I would like to, I would like them to get wild again, and I'm trying to figure out how.
Huh. That's interesting because the first show that I saw of yours in 2010, I didn't have the social circle that I have now. But as I met people in my time here, I would know, oh, Catherine Gonzalez. You know, I saw her in a piece that Alice did. And your work then wasn't as refined as it is now as far as the detailing goes.
Yeah.
You were still able to capture the essence of people. That's what I just find so fascinating.
That was a really fun show. That was a great series because I decided to exhibit women having a range of emotions because I wasn't seeing it anywhere. You know, back in the day, media would just have women smiling, eating salads, eating yogurt, laughing. You know, everybody was happy. But women shouldn't have to be held down to, like, just one standard of emotion. And so I was trying to exhibit a wide array of emotions, and I think that's what people really connected with that series. Anger, surprise, somebody was eating. And that's not something you usually see in portraits, and I think that was my most successful part about that series.
Huh. How do you hope your show, the newest show, impacts people?
You know, I hope it is kind of a call to arms for representation, because diversity is so important. And in our culture, which I believe is white supremacist and patriarchal, it's easy to think that even though it's 2021, that we have fixed any of that, but we haven't. You know, everybody needs to include people of color in their ad campaign or their art or their work. You know, include people with disabilities, include people from lower socioeconomic status. It actually comes from my mistakes in the past. I had a show in a series in 2016 or 2017, I can't remember. And it was called Motherhood, and it was about mothers, and I didn't include any Black women. Bemidji has a very large Indigenous population, so I inevitably included Indigenous mothers. But at the opening, a Black woman came up to me and said, I don't see any Black mothers here. And that has stuck with me. I don't know her. I wouldn't recognize her, but she changed my career.
That's Alice Blessing. Her newest exhibit, 13, Nonconformity, opens tonight at the Watermark Art Center. What started out as a series study of feminism and puberty in a sexist, patriarchal culture morphed into something much more deeply personal than she ever could have imagined, thanks to her own child. Now the exhibit is an experience that addresses intersectionality, gender, and diversity, all while celebrating kids, just as they are, perfectly individual in their very own ways. I'm Katie Carter. Area Voices is made possible by the Arts and Cultural Heritage Fund and by the citizens of Minnesota.